Blog Talk Radio.
It's too young to be on that bridge. It's too young to be sitting on a ditch. Too young to be losing. You're too young.
Welcome to the Healthy Baby Boomers Network Blog Talk Radio Show. I am your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, a spiritual relationship expert helping men and women heal their bodies, their relationships, and their lives through love. Author of the book, Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me, and director of HealthyBabyBoomersNetwork.com. This show is all about living your dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining love and health and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter how old you are right now. In every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who are proving that life can and often does get better and better as we reach our 40s, 50s, 60s, and beyond. Today I'm speaking with Steve Borgman, a licensed clinical professional counselor with a passion to bring hope, understanding, and solutions to both his readers and the clients he works with in his private practice. He writes about personal growth development at his blog, Personal Success Factors, and he enjoys promoting successful life strategies for individuals on the autism spectrum at his other blog, Prosper with Asperger's, and he has currently written a new ebook. So now I would like to welcome my friend and colleague, Steve Borgman. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Erica. It's really a privilege to be here.
Well, I'm happy to have you here. So you have done a lot online and with counseling and in a few different areas I'm seeing, like personal success factors and also with Asperger's. So I'd like to begin by asking you to tell us a little bit about your background and training, graduate education, and then what you're currently involved in.
Okay. Well, I've always had an interest in personal growth and development, and I guess I'll start off by telling you a little bit about you and your readers, a little bit about where I grew up. I grew up in Brazil, South America. My parents were missionaries, and I went to boarding school at the age of 8 years old, I believe, or was it seven?
Wow.
And so from an early age, I was away from my parents and in a fairly supportive environment, but it was a missionary boarding school, and that was kind of the way people did things in those days. My father just turned 80, so his contemporaries back then, that was kind of just the subcultures that kids went to boarding school. And, you know, later on, because my parents are kind of people helpers, I thought I was supposed to be a missionary. And after going through a lot of career development and questioning, even after college, I figured out that that wasn't necessarily my calling, but I very much enjoyed working with people and helping them move forward in their own lives. And in the course of going through my own counseling, of course, as you can imagine, there were some unresolved grief issues for me, some attachment issues having been separated from my parents at an early age that I really didn't own up to and become aware of until I went through my own counseling process. Also, I had developed some beliefs from the subculture. You know, number one, you know, money is suspect. Number two.
Well, that's not just your subculture. So many of us feel that way about money.
Yes. And then number two, you know, pursuing your own goals and dreams isn't necessarily a priority. It has to be subjugated to the greater cause. That was kind of an unwritten rule. And So in the course of going through that, and in the course of going through that and working through my own personal growth barriers, coming upon writers like Brian Tracy and Anthony Robbins, it was just extremely exciting to me. And I still to remember to this day Brian Tracy saying, whenever anyone complains to him, he has a mantra he repeats to them over and over: "You are responsible." And that single thing really propelled me into being able to take control of my circle of influence and learn to be proactive, as Stephen Covey talks about, and it's made all the difference in my life. And so having come through that, and obviously I believe in higher power, and I've had a lot of blessing from supportive higher power experiences and community, that has helped me really revamp my beliefs. And coming out of that, of course, I have a lot of gratitude that I want to share with other people. And that's kind of become my mission, as I've done a lot of personal examination in writing my own mission statement. I realized, you know, what did I want my focus in life and my practice to be? And that was, number one, to help people develop that same self-awareness and understanding of what's holding them back, like I did, like I had those limiting beliefs. Also, to in the course of that, to provide solutions, because a lot of times we're stuck because we don't know how, awareness is the first step. The second step is, how do I get from where I am to where I want to be? So that's where the solutions come in, and that's what brings hope. And really, hope is what I want to bring to every person's life, both readers and people I work with.
Oh, it sounds wonderful. But what you said about solutions, a lot of us want to do something, but we didn't learn how to do it because in our family, like you said, you know, you weren't supposed to go after your own dreams. But we can learn these things. That's what
I'm saying. Absolutely.
That we can learn this, but you do have to find someone who can teach it to you. And it sounds
correct.
Like you can really help people. So what led to your writing your blog called Personal Success Factors? Then I'll ask about some of the other aspects.
Okay. Well, I have to say, in a good way, it was selfish to begin with. And I started writing to motivate myself. I figured that, Brian Tracy talks about the importance of self-study as a way to really pull ahead in your life. And so he challenged his readers to set aside 1 hour a day of personal study, and just to, you know, number one, to study personal development, number two, though, to study your field. And so for myself, I wanted to become the best possible self, as we say, and both in my career. I work not only as a counselor, but I also work in a corporation, and I wanted to, absorb ideas that would help me better serve my customers and advance. And in the course of doing so, I felt like I could help other people by sharing that information. So really, that's kind of how Personal Success Factors came into being. And I find that as I write for myself, I have kind of switched from writing for myself to really wanting to write for my readers.
That's great. I wanted to ask you something about your other blog post also, Prosper with Asperger's, because that's completely different from personal. I think it's completely different. Maybe it isn't, from Personal Success Factors.
Yes, it is pretty different. I think there is something that I do take into that blog from Personal Success Factors, and that is my enjoyment of positive psychology. And for those who aren't aware, psychology for many years had to do with diagnosing what's wrong with people, looking at their weaknesses, and then helping them work on those weaknesses. Positive psychology came along with Dr. Martin Seligman, and he started asking the question, how about if we look at people who are performing at peak levels and
can you
study...
Can you see it? It's breaking up a little bit. your phone.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that better?
Yeah, just a little closer or something. Okay.
Yes. So Dr. Seligman was interested in looking at peak performers and seeing what is it about them that's helping them perform so well. And so in working with people with Asperger's or Asperger's, I've been wanting to bring not only the deficits that are there for people with Asperger's, but also to have a heavy emphasis on their strengths and on their positive attributes. How I became interested in Asperger's.
Before you continue, can you just take a moment to explain what Asperger's is? Not everybody understands it. They know if they're living with someone who has that or if they have it. But otherwise,
yeah,
they may not know.
Thanks for asking the question, Dr. Erica. Well, I guess I want to start off, and I think if I could introduce what Asperger's is, I'll do it in a very personal way, and that is when my son was about 2.5 years old, my parents pointed out that he didn't seem to be developing in the same way as a regular child would be in terms of being interested in them, talking to them. Of course, at first I was somewhat defensive. I thought they were just being a little picky and that they were taking it personally, that he wasn't interacting with them because they weren't around all the time. But then over the course of time, different people started giving us feedback, and what really triggered me was when a next-door neighbor who is an early childhood specialist said, you know, your son isn't speaking and at the age that he should have been speaking. And so it was her words that somehow got through to me. He would lie down on the sidewalk and watch tires spin. He would get very upset when we would deviate from our normal commuting routine. But I just dismissed that as being regular, you know, just idiosyncrasies. But we got him tested, and he came up with the diagnosis of autism. Well, autism and Asperger's are pretty much, and with the revision of the DSM-4, it's going to be changing to, they're going to be all one term. Asperger's, generally there is a level of, you know, a normal IQ. They're able to speak and function, and it's a lot of times called an invisible disability because you and I would look at them and maybe think they're a little different, but a lot of times they function. There's a lot of people in Silicon Valley, as Dr. Grandin would say. She's an expert in the field and herself has autism, and she says there's many engineers and people who might seem kind of tech savvy but a little socially awkward, and they just don't understand. It's a lot of times it's called face blindness, having a very difficult time making sense of, you know, what people are thinking and feeling, how does social interactions work, and as a result, a lot of times they will struggle with loneliness and a lack of being able to connect with people. And so because my son was diagnosed with this, obviously I have a huge interest in this. And I also started getting referrals for children who were diagnosed with this as well. So I guess that combination of me wanting to best understand my son, be the best parent I can to him, and then also realizing that I could take this learning and apply it within my private practice has led me to this specialty.
Well, it's a beautiful, you know, work that you're doing because you're going to help a lot of people, and I'm sure you're already helping people that really need that help and maybe are ignored by lots of other people or misunderstood. So I have another question for you. What personal mission drives you in your life at this point?
Well, that's a great question, and I think we're always in the process of asking ourselves that question and trying to get more clear on it. I think it goes back to what I shared earlier. Based on all the challenges and difficulties I've been through in my life, which, you know, some of those are a lot less than other people, and some of them are more than other people. But I think the point is we all have our own kind of hero's journey where we we grow up with certain things, certain disappointments, certain hurts, and as we become adults, we need to work through those things. Sometimes we try to protect ourselves from those things as a defense mechanism, but if we really want to press forward, we have to be able to work through those. And so having received a lot of help and a lot of hope, it's been my desire to affect as many people as possible, both offline and online, to help them see that there is understanding, that I understand, that other people understand, and that there's hope and that there is solutions for them to turn their lives around.
And you're doing that with people who have Asperger's and with people who are in other ways totally normal and yet are struggling in some aspect of life.
Absolutely. And, you know, when I'm thinking about who I'm writing for two sets of people. One set of people are people who are, you know, doing pretty well. A lot of boomers, for example, are very motivated, very goal-directed. The only thing that happens is we don't want to admit it, but we're getting older. And sometimes the challenges of technology and learning new things, like any other adults, you know, it can be challenging to navigate that. So my mission with people my age and older is to help them see that there is a lot of hope in terms of even with this economy, there's hope for forging new directions, for learning new things. And so a lot of the people I write for are already very successful people, and it just might be that they want to continue to succeed and also succeed in different ways, maybe online. I know Dr. Erica, you've made a lot of bold changes in your life that you might not have imagined yourself making at one point. And so I write for those people. But I also write for people like myself who at one point in my life, I was very kind of unaware of the pains in my life, the things that were holding me back. And there was a vague dissatisfaction. I just wasn't sure what it was and how to get there. And so I also want to help people raise awareness of personal growth and of the fact that there are people out there supportive of their dreams and helping them move forward. As I think both of you and I have discussed before this call, there aren't always people like that. We may be surrounded by people who aren't looking out for our best interests or don't have the same commitment to personal growth. But when
not only not looking out for our own best interests, but suppressing us and stopping us and criticizing, maybe because those people or that person is not reaching out to do something new, so they kind of stop you from doing it. So
exactly.
That exists around you. And so I have a question. Why do you think some people can make these positive changes and really continue to succeed and others can't? Like, what's the difference or what stops them?
Sure. Well, you know, I think that, and it's, I know it's not black and white. I mean, it's not like some people can't make changes and other people are always consistently making great changes. I saw a great analogy of success. It was a bunch of scribbles, and then the arrow slowly gradually pointed up. And the scribbles often define, you know, the messiness of us falling down and picking ourselves up. But I think some people have a hard time changing because, number one, they have those negative beliefs or maybe inaccurate beliefs that they've absorbed over the years, as I talked about briefly in the beginning. Number two, they don't have the support network, maybe. They don't have fans who are cheering for them and telling them they could do it. Or they don't have a paradigm or an example of other people who are at the next level. So if those people aren't in their lives, then they may feel, you know, kind of lost, but they don't have a reference point. And other people who are making positive changes, I think they have come across other people who are making positive changes. They also have come across a reference point or an example of someone who has been where they are, and now they're saying, hey, look at me. If I can do it, you can do it. I think another thing is overwhelm. I think for people who are trying to make a change, sometimes it just seems way too big. And for people who are moving forward, they've had other people in their lives help them see that they can break it down and start small. And so I think those are some of the differences.
Well, it's very valuable. I've also noticed that there are people who go through all these barriers, and then when they talk about it, they leave out all those parts and all the struggle that they had, and they make it look as though they just did it overnight. And nobody does it overnight. Everybody, no matter what the field is, it takes years, it takes a lot of work and learning to succeed. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, so you mentioned something else that I'd like you to talk more about, something about disappointments, how people sometimes are so upset by things not working right, but you looked at it in another way, that disappointments can be a source of our greatest learning. So maybe talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, and this has been extremely helpful to me because, you know, I am a learned optimist. In other words, there's a term in psychology circles how people become increasingly depressed because they learn to be helpless. And in my case, because of exposure to personal development, I've learned to become increasingly optimistic. But it is a journey and a skill that you have to be put into practice. We have to continually train ourselves to think in more positive ways. And excuse me, Dr. Erica, can you remind me again of what you were asking?
About how disappointments can
I'm sorry.
Lead to great
learning. Yeah, I got off on
that. That's okay.
Got off on that tangent.
Yeah.
But so in that vein, disappointments. My automatic programming is to get really sucked into disappointments and the term that they call shame. I had a lot of toxic shame to recover from in my life because I grew up with very high standards for myself, from other people, and I was used to meeting those. And so disappointments or mistakes or failure, however you want to talk about it, those for me were things that I very much associated with pain and that I had to avoid. And then when I read an author, I believe her name is Ginny Ridenour, I could be wrong, she wrote a book called The Best Year Yet, and I learned from her that disappointments, they're kind of like mining for diamonds. When we dig up these lumps of coal, they're not very attractive, but if we can really work on the mining process, which can be painful, we can come out with diamonds. And so I'm just going to share a very brief disappointment I had. I was re-evaluating my relationships, and one of these exercises is to look at the different areas of your life rated on a scale of 1 to 10 and say, you know, how effective was I in this role over the last year? So I had my spokes, you know, my spokes coming out from the center. There's my life, and there's my spokes, which represent the different roles. And, you know, I made great progress online. I made great progress in my job. Guess what was terribly lacking? Relationship.
Yeah.
And does that surprise us? Because I grew up, you know, not in a lot of deep relationships because I learned early on to be independent and to not be around people as much. But it's something that I desperately wanted. But like many other people who can relate to this, maybe I wanted the relationship, but I was afraid to get close. Maybe because they wouldn't last, because we travel back to the United States from Brazil every
right.
4 years, and those relationships would change. But fortunately, through looking at that and examining it more closely, I realized relationships is what it's all about. If I don't have relationships, it doesn't matter a bit what I've accomplished in my life. Do I want to get to the end of my life and be surrounded by things or accomplishments, or do I want to be surrounded by people? And maybe this is something that we boomers, well, I'm a little bit below a boomer, but not much, we boomers can relate to, is that you know, I think boomers are programmed to also acquire a lot of things and to pile up the accomplishments, but we realize as we get older how important relationships are. So having looked
at
that disappointment.
The early boomers did grow up with the idea of love.
Oh, good. Good. Yes, peace and love. Okay, okay. I guess I'm relating to some other boomers who I know that are very good at if you think of maybe some of the stereotypes. Maybe I'm not. I have to do a little more research and understanding all that. But I know I'm kind of prone to wanting to accomplish a lot, do a lot of things, acquire things, but realizing and realizing that my friendships were very low. Fortunately, I was able to change my focus this year to really focus on spending more time with friends, having more couples over, deepening my business partnerships, and it's made a huge difference. So that's just one example of how a disappointment turned into a victory for me.
That's wonderful, and it's also showing, we're kind of running out of time, so I just want to summarize that piece. It's also showing that when you take a good look at your whole life, you know, and break it down, you can see which areas you could use improvement on, and you can make those improvements. But before we end, I would like you to tell our listeners about your new ebook, how they could get it, what the name of it is. The name, Change Your Life the Smart Way. Just tell a little bit about it and what the URL is, how they could get it.
Sure. Well, the way that they can find the book is at my site, Personal Success Factors. If I had been thinking about this early on, I would have taken the hyphens out of it, but I decided 2020. So if they go personal-success-factors.com, there's a tab along the top of the page that says Change Your Life the Smart Way, and that's where you can read more about the book and get it for yourself. I'm very passionate about this because this is something that I'm not just trying to promote for the sake of promotion, but something that I personally have utilized over the last 5 to 6 years, and just the example of disappointments is just one way that I have really turned my life around in many ways, and there's a lot more there, but it's a different take on goal setting, and I like to change goal setting to fulfillment targets versus goals.
Oh, I like that.
Well, I stole that idea from Internet Business Mastery, and you can look them up. They're great guys. But, yeah, when we have fulfillment targets, it's a way, it's very motivating. And not only that, but to do it in a balanced way where you're looking at all areas of your life and you're not sacrificing different key areas for another. So this is a way that you can really forge ahead, change your life the smart way, and do it in a balanced way.
Can you just say the name of that again? Fulfillment what?
Fulfillment targets.
Oh, that's great.
So you'll,
thank you.
Yeah, so what you I didn't write that in the book, but in the book there are ways to form your fulfillment targets under your key areas of life so that you're making sure that you're living a significant life, not just a successful life.
That is just wonderful. Steve, thank you so much for sharing your life-changing suggestions on how to create true success and happiness, and a really fulfilled life at any age. On our next show, I'll be speaking with Nancy Gaynor, co-owner of an amazing ranch and resort in Whitefish, Montana, a perfect place to get away from your busy city life, enjoy natural surroundings, healthy activities, and good wholesome food. I am your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, saying goodbye for now. Please visit my website, healthybabyboomersnetwork.com, to get your free report, How to Live to 100 and Beyond, or schedule a coaching or counseling appointment at drericawellness.com. And also I have a book coming out, Adventures in Manifesting, Success and Spirituality, and my chapter is Awakening Love.